Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. As ever, if you love what we do on the podcast and you have just 2 minutes of your day, it would mean the absolute world if you could do one of two things. We would sincerely appreciate it. Firstly, either subscribe or follow us on your chosen podcast platform. You're probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you do follow us, we'll automatically pop into your podcast inbox every single week. You won't need to search for Health Hacks ever again. We'll just magically arrive in your inbox and you can catch up on the latest episodes. Or if you could share the podcast with someone in your inner circle, it would mean the world. Perhaps you've had a conversation with someone recently, maybe they're looking to make healthy changes to their lifestyle, maybe they've complained that their sleep is way off, maybe they're going through a particularly hectic time and want to improve their stress management, maybe they have a weight loss goal. If you think that they would find the topics that we cover on Health Hacks valuable, please do share it with them. It is our mission to spread our message as far and wide as we possibly can. And the more ears that we can reach, the more people that we can help, the absolute better. If the work that we do here resonates with you and you love the topics that we cover, if what we do on the podcast has interested you, and maybe you've thought once or twice about the prospect of working with us directly, you can do so at the moment at absolutely no cost. Yep, absolutely free for 14 days. The Lifestyle Project trial is currently running and we'd love to welcome you to the team. As we transition into the last quarter of the year, there is still time to make changes to your health and well-being before the end of 2023. And the Lifestyle Project is here to support you to kickstart those changes, to light that fire in you and help build momentum to your goals in 14 days. If you'd like to find out more about the Lifestyle Project, there are several ways to do so. I'm guessing you're a podcast listener as you're joining me here, and there's a short episode, which I'll link in the show notes, which is dedicated to explaining all about the Lifestyle Project, what it involves, who it's suitable for, how much time it takes, all of the questions that you probably have. And of course, more information is available on our website where there is a dedicated space for the Lifestyle Project where you can read about our client experiences and a similar FAQ frequently asked questions section, which should answer everything that is on your mind. If after that you feel we might be the right fit, the link to the application is in the show notes and on the website, and it will ask you a short series of questions all about yourself, and we'll be in touch soon after to get you going on the very day that you apply. So if you consider yourself an action taker and the Lifestyle Project is something that you're interested in, take action, get going, find out more and submit your application to us. We can't wait to work with you. And like I say, there's currently a trial of the program and all we're looking to do in those 14 days is to add a ton of value, jumpstart your health journey, help you build momentum. And at the end of the 14 days, all we ask for is your very honest feedback on how you found your time with us. We want this to be the most amazing program we've ever put together. And in order to create that, we need your feedback. Very, very simply. So like I say, for the time being, there's a trial, you can join us and it's absolutely free for 14 days. Last but not least, this is very exciting, but the podcast now comes to you in partnership with Natural Cycles. If you've been listening to our platform for a while and any of the podcasts dedicated to female health specifically, you'll have heard every single one of our experts discuss the importance of being in tune with your body. And Natural Cycles allows you to do just that, empowering you to understand your body to a greater extent, to make informed decisions and take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles uses your daily basal body temperature and other key data points to pinpoint your fertile and non-fertile days with remarkable accuracy. It's 100% hormone-free, the only FDA-cleared birth control app, and now, very excitingly, linked directly with your Apple devices. So if you have an Apple Watch, it will now link seamlessly. I started using Natural Cycles back in January of this year after a decade of oral contraception use, and it has given me such an incredible insight into my own body. I use every single day and I've been so impressed with the ease of use and the accuracy of the algorithm. Whether you're using Natural Cycles as birth control, to plan pregnancy, just to get to know your own body, or to take notes and navigate through perimenopause and menopause, it is a wonderful tool. And if you'd like 20% off Natural Cycles and a free thermometer, simply use the link in the show notes below. I think that's more than enough for me, but if you'd like to join the Lifestyle Project or look into Natural Cycles more, all of the links are below. Without further ado, let's get into this week's episode.
So for this week's episode, I want to start with I don't know if the word's a disclaimer, but it's something about health and nutrition that frustrates me. So I have spent, I think I calculated it, nearly about £2,000 on my education within health and wellness and fitness, etc. But it's not rocket science, right? But there's so much stuff on the internet that makes it so confusing for anyone to go, what is the right way? I want to live better. I want to feel better. I want to perform better. But I have this person telling me this, this person contradicting that, this person doing this, etc. And then it's just a whole mess of health and wellness. And I get everyone's frustration where I don't know the best things to do because every top person contradicts each other. There's high level doctors who preach a ketogenic diet. There's high level doctors that completely BS the ketogenic diet and so many other things. So I think that's what, like, I sympathize with a lot of people who are trying to make a difference, but they just don't know where to look. How often do you come across that?
Loads, definitely around products. So whenever something hits the market or there is a new one recent thing, I don't know if you saw this, Boots have a new fat loss injection. So you don't need to go on a diet. You can just jab yourself in the bum a couple of times and you're going to lose weight. But I think we definitely get a lot of questions around products, and it's great marketing by a lot of these companies and a lot of these individuals. Like, I think we will talk about this as we go, but always think about where the messaging is coming from. And just because someone is shouting the loudest, watch where their bias is coming from.
Well, so now that's made me think, when you said the word bias, that made me come onto this disagreement that I had online. And then
who did you fight with? What happened?
I don't fight. I'm very diplomatic, you know that. But so basically there was this health guru touted that everyone needs to do grounding. Okay. For those who don't know what grounding is walking on the earth barefoot. So walking on the grass barefoot. And he touted that a new scientific study proves that grounding helps reduce stress. So everyone needs to now get grass and walk on the earth for X amount of time a day. Okay. Now, there was a scientific study published that said, yes, grounding, like this study proves that grounding reduces stress. However, what you really need to do, and this is where I get so frustrated. You then need to be able to understand scientific literature or know someone and respect someone that understands scientific literature. Because if you look at the study, the methodology was two groups of people for 2 weeks. One group did grounding every day. The other group didn't. And all it was subjective questioning. So how stressed do you feel? And so on and so forth. So one, there's no actual scientific data in that. It's one group said they felt less stressed after doing 2 weeks of grounding. So take that with what you want with does grounding work.
The placebo is a wonderful thing.
Well, 100%, 100%. But also the most important thing with this is the study was funded by a company that sells grounding bed sheets, pillowcases, and whatever. So of course, if they're funding a study, the study is going to come out saying their product is useful. You need to buy our product, etc. So this is where some gurus on the internet who may not be as academically qualified as they need to be able to giving advice, they just go, oh, this is scientifically proven. And it's like, well, it's not really. Like, you've got to really look into this. And that's where I think when you say people's bias, who's funding things? And that's where you've got to really, really find where the nitty and gritty and where stuff comes from is who's funding the information, because that's going to show you if there's a bias intent there or not.
Like, the classic one is the Kellogg's funding their breakfast campaign. The breakfast.
Yeah, who created breakfast is the most important meal of the day? Mr. Kellogg, marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And it's still to this day, people like will tell me, yeah, so I know breakfast is the most important deal. I'm like, it's not. It's completely not. It's just completely made up. But it shows the power of marketing.
Yeah. Do you know, and you were just talking there and I thought, do you know what? The list is just getting longer, isn't it? Of all the things we're supposed to do for our health. Isn't it? We have to ground now and we have to, it's just getting longer and longer and longer of all the things that you have to tick off every single day. And more these things are coming along and I'm thinking you would really need to prove something pretty significant to me to make me want to add it onto my list of things that I now think I need to be doing.
Hopefully we can kind of get into this in the podcast, is that it really isn't that long. But people make it seem that you've got to be doing all these things. When realistically, you do fight like these handful of things, you'll be a different person. Yeah. But it's just, and we'll get into the myths and the bunking myths, kind of the main thing, the point of the podcast, because there is so much shit out there. And due to social media and due to a lot of people, it worked for me. So X, Y, and Z, which I get something where humans are completely different. Like, not everyone's going to do the same thing, but just because it works for you doesn't mean you need to preach it as in this is the only way. It's, this is a way that worked for me. There are thousands of ways. You got to find the right way that works for you. And then our goal as coaches is to shortcut it.
It's funny you say that about, you know, the preaching, and it's the person who shouts the loudest is heard. I used to feel quite bad from a coaching standpoint, or I used to be very, very conscious of the fact that I sit on the fence with a lot of things, as in sit in the middle and generally will like to consider both sides. But I don't think any of my views look at the extreme in either way. There are actually very few things that I would say absolutely not or absolutely do this. With anything, context is key and there's so much nuance there. But I used to be very, very conscious about the fact that, you know, your likes of James Smith and any loud voice on social media, for example, that is very, this is the only way, or this is the best way, or it's that wording, right? And because we're so used to seeing and reading that, it ties into this idea that there is one way, one method, one singularly best way. Now, if that were the case, one, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Everyone would know what it was. Mm-hmm. But also, we wouldn't have the massive health issues that we have societally, because we would know that there are these universal, singular things that we should, that we do. That's just not the case.
And that's what I call the art of coaching. So when I'm talking to companies or individuals, I'm like, I don't have a philosophy. The company that I run, we do not have a philosophy that is, the ketogenic diet is the best diet. The carnivore diet is the best diet. This style of exercise, the best style of exercise. The art, like if you have that, which some people do, some people are really good keto coaches, but I wouldn't call them a coach because they're just giving a philosophy to someone and saying, you need to follow this philosophy. A coach is there to problem solve and assess and go, right, based on data points, this isn't working. We need to switch this way, rather than what I think some people are is, oh no, you need to get better at sticking to the diet. And it's
that's
like,
a program. That's,
yeah, exactly. That's not coaching.
Yeah, that's exactly. A packaged, in my opinion, that's
I
a
completely
packaged
agree.
program
Completely agree.
that someone has found success in. And
they're just trying to do one of many. A lot of people follow this program. A handful of you will get results. A handful of you won't be able to stick to it, which isn't coaching. It's not anything high level. It's just, follow this. Where coaching is like based on data, based on lifestyle, based on circumstances. How can we now incorporate all of the science into getting you the result that you deserve and that you need, and so on and so forth. So shall we dive into some myths?
Crack on.
So what I've done is kind of break the myths down into kind of certain sections, obviously kind of focusing on the main pillars that we discuss and talk on. So first, let's knock out some sleep myths. So the first one that I want to touch on is one that happens, I have a conversation around all the time. So a lot of people will say, I have alcohol at the end of the day because it helps me sleep. It doesn't. Okay, it doesn't. It's, scientifically, it doesn't. It may help you go unconscious. Unconscious and sleep are not the same thing. When we're sleeping and we want to be properly sleeping, we want what's restorative sleep, as we've touched on in previous episodes, deep sleep, REM sleep, restorative, getting your body functioning. Being unconscious is not the same as being asleep. And this is where people think, if my eyes are closed and I'm not present in kind of reality, I'm sleeping, and it's very, very different. An example I always give to people is, say you and I are lying down and we both look asleep. You've fallen asleep gracefully. Someone's knocked me over the head with a baseball bat and knocked me unconscious. We both look asleep.
Oh yeah, from the outside, yeah.
Your body is doing very, very different things to my body because I've been knocked unconscious and I'm not in any restorative state. Your body is going and drifting into a deep sleep cycle, restoring, burning body fat and so on and so forth, where I've just been unconscious. Same thing when it comes to drinking alcohol to help you fall asleep. It's helping you go unconscious, but it's not giving you any net gain of recovery, cognition, memory, function, and ability. So that's one, and that's one I fight often because it takes a while. Like, if you, because you're drinking alcohol to fall asleep, to cause unconscious, so there's a bit of an addiction there. So you've then got to try and go, well, you need to stop drinking alcohol, which means it's going to take you a little bit longer to fall asleep because you've been addicted to the routine of alcohol helping you fall asleep to get there. So it's one of the things going, oh, I've not drunk for 3 nights and I've really struggled to fall asleep. It's like, yeah, well, you've been drinking every night for 5 years to fall asleep. It's going to take longer than 3 nights to fix it. So it's one of the ones, a constant battles where you've just got to commit to it to be able to get that restorative sleep. And that's why I love tracking, because people go, oh yeah, I drink every night and it helps me fall asleep better. Well, here's your sleep data. It's not helping you sleep.
Yeah. It's difficult to, unless you stop though, it's difficult to compare that data.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You've got to have a point where
you won't feel the benefits unless you actually do it. And this is the thing, people get stuck in the cycle, don't they? They'll keep using it. But I think the other thing that it goes back to is using alcohol in the evening as this relaxant. And you know that dopamine hit from the first glass of wine that you get, you know, end of a long week. I'm thinking of a Friday night. You pour that glass of wine, you have that first sip, and it's almost like that. Oh, that feeling. It only lasts 20 minutes or so. Because think about it, you're looking for that next dopamine hit. But your cortisol is rising and rising and rising in response to the alcohol.
Yep.
So your ability to actually fall into that sleep, as you've said, is not... The waking up early is always the one that gets me as well. From alcohol.
Oh, you feel that you wake up earlier?
I do wake up super, super early. It's like that transition from deep to REM. It's that interrupted REM sleep, and I always wake up very, very, feel I wake up early
and due groggy to and so on and so forth. So that's one that I think is a big myth, because I hear it kind of all the time. Next myth, which I know you love a bit of Matthew Walker. So next myth around sleep that we can go through is people believe that it is possible to function well on 5 hours of sleep or less. So you don't hear it, it's fine, I get 5 hours, but it's good, I can function on five. Right. Obviously, we need to debunk it. So there was Matthew Walker's Why We Sleep, where there was a study done on it, an amazing book. And it's something like less than 2% of the population, the whole human population, can function to the same ability on less than 6 hours of sleep. So not even 5 hours on, less than 6 hours of sleep. That shows the power of sleep. If you are performing on and you only get 5 hours or whatever sleep a night, think about how good you can perform if you get 7+, 8+. It's different level. But people believe, and I hear all the time, that I can function on this amount of hours. You can't. Your body is not performing in the same way. What are your thoughts or input on that one?
I was trying to find the statistic that equates the lack of sleep to the units of alcohol consumed. It had nothing to do with what we've just talked about, but yeah. It was to do with the number of hours or of sleep deprivation and how that's akin to consuming alcohol. And what really opened my eyes to this a few weeks ago when I was reading that book about junior doctors who were sleep deprived in hospitals and having to do these surgeries on people when they'd been doing, you know, 12, 13, 14 hour shifts without breaks. They were chronically sleep deprived and they were getting asked to do these surgeries on these people when they were incredibly sleep deprived, terrifying to start with. But it's if you think you function well with only 5 hours, try sleeping 8 hours for the majority of the week and then tell me how you feel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, you will not be performing well enough. You don't have enough time for your body to go through the stages of optimization with deep sleep, REM sleep, and so on and so forth. You're not giving your body a time enough to recover. So like, your memory is not going to be good enough. Your mental acuity is not going to be good enough. Your decision-making, your sharpness, let alone
metabolism.
Your body's ability, your mood, your body's ability, because you're just not giving your body time to recover. And I think the favorite thing I've ever heard about sleep is what you said when we did that event. What's the quote about animals and sleep?
Humans are the only species on the planet that purposely deprive themselves of sleep for no net gain.
It's like, how mental.
So if you think about it, if anyone's got a dog, what if you go on a really, really long walk with your dog, or you go out and about and the dog gets tired, he will sleep anywhere. Under the table in the cafe, the back seat of the car, you know, when dogs are tired, they respond to that that need. As humans, we think, we'll push. I think, though, do you know what? It's really unfortunate that it's almost, maybe we've gotten through this, maybe we're seeing the light at the end of this tunnel, but I remember when we were definitely younger, and I had a lot of friends starting out in offices and embarking on corporate careers, there was some merit in the amount of sleep that you could function on. You know, you almost got a gold star for operating on the least amount of sleep. And I think that's a really, really problematic mentality for everyone. You know, I can get by on 5 hours. I'm absolutely fine. I can function. It's not, I don't think it's something that we should be putting on a pedestal at all.
No, not at all. Completely.
Never feel guilty for sleeping. Never, ever feel guilty. I find this with women a lot, actually, that they feel a little bit guilty for getting 8 hours sleep.
Yeah, it shocks me. Like, it just shocks me. It just absolutely shocks. Sleep is like the fundamental part of our life. We spend a third of our life doing it for a particular reason. Like, there's a reason why we sleep and so on and so forth. There's a reason why every animal sleeps, right? And you got to think about it. Even in the wild, right? So even prey animals who are getting hunted sleep. For them, it is no advantageous to sleep because that's when they're most vulnerable. But they need sleep to be able to recover and perform the next day, etc. So everything needs to sleep, and it's just emphasizing how important that is. So next one on sleep, which is again lies in with the one we just touched on, but myth 3 on sleep is you can make up any lost sleep on weekends.
I used to think this, and I used to do this a lot.
This is very, very common. Very, very common. Sleep debt is a thing. Sleep debt is a thing, which is obviously we need around 8 hours of sleep an evening. Between seven and nine is generally where human beings will lie. Some human beings need 9, some human beings need 7, etc., etc. Sleep debt is when you don't hit enough sleep that you need, right? And then a lot of people go, well, if I sleep 5 hours a night, Monday to Thursday, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, I'll try and get 9, 10 or whatever to compensate. It's only about an hour or two of sleep debt a week you can catch up on a weekend. So anything more than 2 hours, you cannot catch up on, and you will be in what is known as sleep deprivation, where your body is not performing or functioning the way it may be. So trying to catch up on weekends can't happen, doesn't happen. Only if it's maybe you've missed an hour or two because of X, Y, and Z, not 3 hours a night, 2 hours a night, consistently and consistently.
Sleep doesn't like extremes, does it? It doesn't like swings in cycle. Regularity with your sleep cycle is the aim of the game. I think one thing, have you ever slept so much at the weekend as well that you felt actually worse than before? That really groggy feeling where you can oversleep. That's actually quite an uncomfortable feeling too.
Yeah, well, your circadian rhythm is completely out of shot. Like, your body wants to be in a system. It wants to be working. Your hormones want to be going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time as this. Where if you're then getting 3 hours later, kind of a lie-in on the weekend, so you get up at like 5 a.m. on a Monday to Friday or whatever, then your weekend you get up at like 8 or something. Your body's like, what is going on? Like, when do we get up? When do you want us to perform? When is the function? We need to give you cortisol. We need to give you serotonin, all these things. Your body's just so confused, which then makes you feel horrendous when you're getting up and you don't feel recovered.
So if someone is in sleep debt and they're saying, well, wait, I want to top up at the weekend, I'm in a sleep debt throughout the week, what do they do about that? How do they remedy that?
So obviously, route one is fixing weekly schedule, like but that may take a bit of a longer term solution to get in there. Like, it doesn't happen overnight, etc. So when it comes to obviously like helping keep circadian rhythm and body functioning the way it being, actually like micro naps and stuff like that on weekends is more beneficial than a lie-in. Actually giving your body a 20-30 minute nap during the day to just recover is a much better way of then having maybe an extra hour, 2 hours in bed in the morning, because you're not affecting your kind of circadian rhythm and your hunger and your hormones in that sense. So going, right, I'll get up at a similar time, right? And then crack on. And then even at 10, I get a bit dozy, I'll have a quick nap, or at 2, I can have a nap in the afternoon just to recharge, recover the batteries and so on and so forth. So that would be a first step, would be keep the circadian rhythm in place, but take a nap. Step two would then be, let's really address the weekly schedule because we need to be sleeping longer.
Yeah, I find with my ladies, it's generally the evening isn't efficient or effective enough to allow them to get the sleep. So it's not always about increasing. A lot of us can't increase the sleep that we're getting in our mornings, you know, commuting times, getting the kids up, etc. It's not possible to do that. The place where you have the most control is in that evening routine and in that evening schedule. And generally, we're spending a lot, not ineffective time at the weekend, during the week in the evenings. I know we want to wind down, but a lot of us are faffing around, for want of a better word, in the evenings. Be intentional with your time, and I think get used to making sleep a priority. It's almost the last thing that we think about sometimes, and it's the thing that gets pushed when life gets busy. But actually making that real intention, being like, I'm going to really commit to setting a sleep schedule for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. You will feel the benefits of it, but you need to be intentional on that for sure. Mm-hmm. What about, let me ask you then, because we're getting into that time of year where it's getting darker earlier. Yep. What does that do to your energy levels and your sleep, if anything?
You definitely feel you get tired sooner because obviously it gets darker. So your body is falling into the natural circadian rhythm of darker, colder. When the lights go down is when light is what produces melatonin. Darkness, light suppresses melatonin. Right. So when light starts going outside and getting darker, your body is producing more melatonin. So with it starting to get darker earlier, you're going to be producing melatonin earlier. So you're going to be feeling a bit more sleepy, a little bit more lethargic, it's getting colder and so on and so forth. So obviously you do need to counteract that with artificial light for a bit longer to make sure you can stay awake. So obviously I live in the UK, but I work on a central time zone. So I'm working pretty much until 8-9 o'clock at night UK. So then I've got to really pay attention to my kind of artificial lighting to keep me functioning so I can work and be productive as late as possible. Flip side, makes it harder to get up in the morning when it's darker as well, because your body's still in that kind of darker circadian state, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the mood thing is a real thing as well. The mood goes down as well.
Well, seasonal depression disorder is a thing, right? Where it gets dark, it gets cold, your body isn't producing as much serotonin stuff because of these things. So everyone feels a little bit down in the dumps and so on during these months. So these are the months where I think you actually have to double down, because you're fighting against more and so on and so forth. It's harder. So you've really got to double down. Like steps, getting up at 6 or 5 to get that walk in before the day starts gets much harder when it's wet and cold and so on and so forth. Or taking that evening walk when it's darker and wet, it's much, much harder. So you have to be so much more conscious about it to get it in, because it's so much easier to say no now.
I don't mind switching up the routine seasonally, though. Almost having like a winter routine versus a spring, summer routine.
Yep. Well, go on.
Yeah, like flipping things around. So potentially even starting work that little bit earlier, but to take that longer break midday to move a little bit more, get sunlight on your face, do all these things, not being afraid to readjust your routine to reflect the seasons, to still fit everything that you want to in, but having to maybe rejig those pieces around to fit with your day.
100%. I'm sure one thing that I do with clients, and I do as well, is when I'm not injured, try and fit your training programming around the year. What I mean by this is, when it's coming into summer, you may want to do more cardiovascular stuff, more exercise outside, more sports outside, and so on and so forth. And you want to maybe carry a little bit less body fat, so maybe dieting a bit. So when it is coming into winter, especially for the men that I work with, it's like, okay, we don't mind putting on a few extra pounds. We know our step count's going to be down. So let's move into a strength phase.
Yeah.
Right. Let's focus on doing these goals in the gym and so on and so forth. And then we've added more muscle tissue, we've added more strength. So next summer comes, when we do our sport phase, we're going to be stronger, we're going to be so on and so forth. Rather than having the same training goal all year round, can get very, very tedious. So trying to split up your goals with seasons as well, I think, is very advantageous of going, okay, like I'm not having I'm not going on a beach anytime soon in the winter months, so I don't mind putting on maybe a couple of extra pounds, because I know I'm going to be getting stronger in the gym. I can have a bit more, I can go on a muscle gaining phase or whatever it may be. I know it's very different men and women when it comes to kind of that level of training and stuff, but that's something that we do to help manage the seasons when it comes to health and fitness as well, and like training.
No, it's funny you say that. I have a lovely client, she's British, but she's based in Latvia. And the winter season in Latvia is obviously, she's a runner, but the snow and the ice and everything that goes along with that, running is just simply not safe. I think as well for females, running at nighttime anywhere in the world is not necessarily something you want to be doing, maybe not the safest route to go down. And she prioritizes her resistance work in the winter months. And it's actually a time that I'm a big fan of classes and group activity, because there's that extra adherence that comes along with that. I booked a class, it's in the diary, like a meeting. It's the adherence of meeting everyone else there. It kind of keeps that morale a little bit higher throughout these winter months. So yeah, changing it up a little bit if need be.
I like it. Right, shall we move into the stress myths?
Yeah.
Right, so the first stress myth is stress cannot be controlled. Okay. So I hear this quite a lot. It's just that, oh, life's so stressful right now. And it's like, yep, life is stressful. But we can control our stresses. We can do things in our life. We can control the controllables to help our body balance and counteract stress. So we're looking at things like, we've spoken before, breath work, meditation, learning how to relax, regular exercise, improving time management, improving organization. There's so many things that we can do to combat stress. It's just that we choose not to. And that's one of my biggest things, is when we go, oh, I'm so stressed right now. It's like, okay, well, let's look at your life. Let's look at your lifestyle. It's like, no wonder you're stressed. let's really work on controlling this. And one of my favorite things that I talk about with a lot of the executives that I work with is control your breath. So, you know, when you, and this is very good for post-workout as well, but you know, when you get stressed and you're getting anxious, you're breathing heavy and so on and so forth, the best thing you can do is control your breath, be the master of your breath. And that is doing deep nasal breathing, which I know we touched on kind of before, but 5 seconds breathing in for your nose, 5 seconds of breathing out for your nose. You controlling your breathing is controlling your nervous system. You controlling your nervous system is you controlling your stress. It's the simplest hack, but just understand that you are the master of your breath and you need to be paying attention to it in moments of stress and so on and so forth. And a way that I try and bring this into people's lives is post-workout. So exercise is a massive stressor on the body. It's a good stressor, but it is a big, big stressor. And if we're working out hard enough, we're going to get our heart rate up, we're going to get our breathing rate up and so on and so forth. So every time you finish a session, you spend the next 2 to 5 minutes controlling your breath, breathing in through your nose, breathing out through your nose until your breath returns to a normal state. That way you get a very good understanding of, wow, I can control my body's reaction to things. I've just calmed myself down from this session within a 2 minute window, right? When you get stressed at work, I can then calm myself down within a minute window, a 2 minute window, and get my body functioning the way it needs to. So stress is all around us, always happens, but we can control how it affects our bodies by breathing.
That's almost like when stress has gotten into the body, into the mind, and we're having to respond to it.
Yep.
I prefer to start with the environment.
Yeah.
And actually look at that first and say, what is happening in your environment that's causing that to elevate in the first place? How can you dampen that?
Yes.
So it's almost like a, I don't know, did you ever play like music as a kid? We used to get these things on the drum kits. I remember they were literally called like dampeners, and you could put them on, and it basically, no matter how hard you hit a drum, it could only make so much noise. Yeah. It's like, for me, it's like, how much of that are you able to create? Like, what's the systems that you have in place to limit the amount of noise actually coming into your world? Mm-hmm. That is like, to me, like a last resort, like having to actually manage your physical mm-hmm. body. Let's limit what's actually coming into your world, whether that be noise, whether that be whether it be messaging, whatever it is. But I would start there, because I think that's just such a throwaway comment now. Oh yeah, life is stressful. Yes, but we're not helping ourselves by the way that we consume and live in this world. Like, okay, if you get stressed on the commute, give yourself 10 minutes longer to get to work, if that's what stresses you out. Mm-hmm. If you get stressed every time that you pick up your phone, you scroll through the news, get rid of the app. Or be selective of where you're getting your media. If it just... That to me is a bigger stressor.
Yeah. No, our environment. The environment's absolutely huge. And we both know, we're not saying that like there are going to be things in life that you cannot control. Work, some work stresses, some family stresses, and so on and so forth. So why make your life harder by adding other stresses to your life, etc.? Because life is going to give you stress. So make it easier by organizing your lifestyle better and so on and so forth.
Like work fires. I'll give you an example. I used to check my emails on the commute into the office. Now, I wasn't near my laptop. I couldn't, you know, if someone would say, oh, we need this file, we need this sent through, we need this done, X, Y, and Z. I was on my phone. I wasn't able to take action on any of the things that were being flagged up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and that is a very, very stressful position to be in, because you can't respond, you can't take action on the stressor. Versus when you're sitting at your desk, you're ready to go, you're pumped up for the day. Fire one comes in, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you can respond to them and you can do something about them quite there, it doesn't have the same effect.
Yep.
And that's what I mean about being really careful about when you are taking in information, and you know, when you're working in that example versus your time off. Mm-hmm. Be really, really conscious of what the effect of that will be.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. Absolutely love that. So I absolutely love that. It's awesome. Next myth I'm going to bring to you, I want to know your kind of reaction to this. So eating back calories burned either from a cardio machine or from a device, be it one of the wearables, etc.
Oh, when it says you've exercised X number of calories.
Yeah, you know, when you do like a run or whatever on a cross, or you do something on a cross trainer, elliptical, bike, whatever, and it's like you've now burnt 1,000 extra or whatever, 1,000 calories. So people go, ah, oh, I burnt 1,000 calories, then I can now have this for dinner, etc.
It's funny. I actually used to do that on the cross, the elliptical. I used to go on and I would quote unquote burn 500 calories in the quickest time possible. That was one of my cardio sessions. But knowing full well that this cardio machine, you know, doesn't know my weight, doesn't know my height, doesn't know my muscle mass, I was doing it as a metric, as a consistent metric, not because I knew it was 500 calories.
Yeah.
I was just using it as a consistent metric. I hate that little tab at the top of the MyFitnessPal app that says, you know, you've done
how many calories you've burned for this. Yeah.
I set to suggest all my clients to take that off, because to keep exercise and diet completely separate, it's just the easiest way to.
But this is the myth. They are so inaccurate. It is painful. Oh, I've burned X amount of calories on the cardio today, so I had extra. I'm like, you didn't burn that many calories. It's so wrong. It's so inaccurate. And it just don't, like, just concentrate on kind of time and distance when you're doing cardio, right? That tells you what, like, wow, in half an hour, I got X distance. Next time, in half an hour, I got a little bit further. In half an hour, I got a little bit further. Now, in 35 minutes, I've gone this distance. Like, that's the metrics you want to track, rather than how many calories I burned, because they're just so inaccurate. And frustrates me about some of these things. I'm like, just take it off, because it's just wrong. Just don't even bother trying. And even some of the wearables, just don't bother telling people, because it's just wrong information. And it
does
confuses.
Aura give anything to do with calories?
Aura gives calorie burn. Yeah, Aura gives calorie burn, and it's just not accurate. It's like not as accurate as, it's not horrendous, but it's not, because you do put your weight and stuff into it. But it's just, again, a metric that I go, don't worry about. It's too difficult to calculate, so it's not worth worrying about. All you need to know, if you're looking at it from a weight loss perspective, pay attention to how many steps you do a day, how much exercise you do, how many calories you consume. If you are losing weight, good. If you're not losing weight, increase your steps, decrease your calories.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to play matchmaker with how many calories am I burning to this, to a daily, to that, to so on and so forth. It's like, it's just too complicated. Don't
just be patient.
Well, yeah, hugely. Yeah. Be patient. Like, it takes time. It takes time to burn body fat. Nothing changes overnight.
What about then cardio versus resistance work for fat loss? So cardio.
Yeah.
Extra cardio for fat loss. What about that?
Obviously more people go cardio for fat loss. So cardio is not an amazing fat burning tool. Like, it's not, it's good. It's good. But so is resistance training. Both are equally as good. Like, both work. Both are going to burn calories. What you get from resistance training is you get building muscle tissue. So you're burning calories and you're building muscle tissue. When you have more muscle tissue on your frame, and we're not talking Arnold Schwarzenegger muscle tissue, we're talking at just muscle, right? Just muscle on your body. Your what's called your basal metabolic rate rises, which basically means the calories that you burn just being you increases. So having more muscle mass on your frame means you burn more calories just being who you are, just sleeping, etc., which means you're going to increase your calorie burn. So both
metabolically efficient.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I would always program both. I would never program resistance training on its own. I would never program cardio on its own, because you need strength and you need cardiovascular fitness and cardiovascular health.
Actually, going back to the previous thing you just said, sometimes when clients are early in their journey, I'll sometimes get questions or comments around, okay, well, I did this workout, this cardio workout. I'm just going to pull the numbers out of the sky here. I burned 200 calories here. Mm-hmm. I did this resistance workout. I only burned 100 calories. And you could see why people would get caught into this trap of thinking, okay, well, in that workout, I burned more doing cardio. Therefore, that's better for fat loss. I see it. What it doesn't take into account, though, is with resistance training, you also get the benefit of EPOC. Exercise, what's exercise?
excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. Yep. So when you do cardio, you only burn the calories that you burn in that, say, half an hour of cardio. That's it. Once you stop the cardio, that's it. Resistance training, on the other hand, after that session, in the repair of that tissue, you continue to burn calories after the workout. So it's almost got a longer, an afterburn, as it were, if you want to phrase it like that.
Yep.
Whereas cardio, when you're in the gym, when you're doing the session, that's what you burn. So it's not a fair representation, but no, I do get that quite a lot.
The combo of both.
Why that would be really confusing.
Yeah, the combo of both is just better. And like when we're talking resistance training, it's not like bodybuilding. Building base level strength, building base level like foundations, or being able to move in certain a squat, a lunge, a press, a pull, a carry, but with load. You're gonna be stronger throughout the rest of your life. Just think of it as strength training or training for life rather than like a bodybuilding style emphasis. And that's what I try and push on kind of clients, stuff like that. It's like, we want to be training to conquer life. And I think one quote that I talk to a lot of the dads that I work with is, and what I try and motivate them with is we want to be training so that our sons never beat us at anything. It's a silly thing, but it's like that, like rather than I'm training for looking a certain way or this, it's like, no, I'm training so that when my son is 28, I still can beat him in absolutely everything. And that's just from a male perspective, that's more motivating. It's like, no, like I'm doing this which flip side of means I'm going to be a very fit and healthy 60, 70, 80 year old because you're able to do the physical things that you want to be able to do.
But for both genders, it's very protective though. So if you're resistance training, you're essentially protecting your body.
Mm.
You're bulletproofing it for future.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's I'll just Google now.
There's always the misconception around resistance training and injury though. And actually you're protecting your bones, joints, faster reaction time. You're going to prevent against falls and fractures, all of these things. And it may seem like that's quite far away if you're a young, fit and healthy thing, but do it now. Mm. You're going to save yourself a lot of hassle further down the line. You're also protected against your chronic diseases and everything else that comes along with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just when we're training so that we can live a better quality life. And that's where you need the combination of resistance / strength training and cardiovascular training so that you can do everything that you want to be able to do into your 60s, 70s and 80s and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to some nutrition ones?
Yeah, we can get one or two in. Yeah.
So this is always a good one that I like to go into. So people thinking low fat or fat free products are healthier choices.
Mm-hmm.
So what this brings to mind for me is yogurts.
Mm-hmm.
When you get like fat free Greek yogurt or zero fat Greek yogurt and so on and so forth. What you need to look at there is then the carb consumption.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things that are fat free will have a lot of sugar to make them taste a bit better. So you then are compensating maybe some healthy fats because yogurt is dairy, will have naturally good fat. So they are taking out the naturally good fats, pumping in sugar to compensate. So they're not necessarily healthier at all. They may be, like some maybe, but not all. And that's why I think people make conscious choices of, I've gone fat free. Cool, but that's really high sugar. Like fat-free eggs. Generally, fat-free will mean high sugar because they're taking out the fat and pumping things with, like say, sugars, fake sugars and all that type of stuff to try and make it taste better. So that's one that I always find is, in which again, makes life harder when you're shopping. Oh, fat-free. Yeah, brilliant. Fat-free, like marketing, it's going to be good for you. Now fat-free version, etc. And it's like, well, actually it's now a higher carb version.
Also, that was such a 90s marketing thing, though, that we were brought up on. So there's such a kind of like historic and traditional, like our how we always had fat-free everything because that was in trend.
Well, at the time. Eggs were bad for you. Cholesterol's there, cholesterol's that, and so on and so forth. Like everything goes through phases. So,
I would argue carbs are getting a harder time at the moment. circle back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, carbs are getting a hard time at the moment. Yeah, carbs. But what you got to look at for carbs as well, I don't think general carbs are getting a hard time. They may be, but that's what I think people have issues with. So processed food should be getting a hard rap, not carbs. Because carbohydrates, you go potato, beautiful. You know, fibrous carbs.
But it's the knowledge between what's the difference between a carbohydrate and what's the difference between a sugar. As in the difference between a starch and a sugar, the two different things.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that's what I would say. That's what I'd say most people go wrong. Like when it's coming to foods, just eat single ingredient foods. Your life will be so much better. It's just that simple.
You don't need to follow a diet. You don't need to do anything. Just is this one ingredient? Or what I generally go rule of thumb is less than five. Because obviously you sometimes may want a condiment that's got maybe a bit of flavors to it, etc. But if it's got less than five ingredients, it's okay. More than five ingredients, probably stay clear. It's not going to be good for you.
And it's like the spectrum, isn't it? There's whole foods, there's processed foods, and then you've got your ultra processed
foods.
So it's that spectrum. And I think it's that book, The Ultra Processed People, is going to do a lot of good for processed food in the UK, at least. There's a lot of them. But I don't think it's helpful that if you actually look at the government guidelines for nutrition, like there, and you could argue there are some of the biggest myths that you could read when it comes
food
to
food pyramid. The food pyramid is atrocious.
The eat well plate, the line in it literally says base meals on potatoes, bread, rice, pasta, or other starchy carbohydrates, ideally whole grain. Now, it's not that I'm saying don't include those things, but base meals on, so build meals around this basis of these carbohydrates.
Yeah.
In the UK government guidelines.
It's awful. US, UK government guidelines for nutrition are utterly horrendous, and they just haven't been updated for I couldn't tell you how long.
I think it was written in 1996. It was something like that. When was the
and nutrition science is only about 30 years old, so these guidelines were written quite like early on in the world of nutrition science, and we found out so much more about nutrition, and they're just not updating the recommendations that they tell people. But it goes country to country, because you know, like there's you eat five fruit and veg a day, right, is what's government guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Japan's nine. So Japan's government guidelines are eat nine fruit and vegetables a day.
Mm-hmm.
Japan don't have an obesity epidemic.
Well, ours were first launched in 1994 and updated in 2007.
Yeah. It's just been so a we're time since they've been updated. Out. Yeah, it's been a lot of time since they've been updated.
And if you think about how much and also how many more products have been brought to the market in 16 years, that changes the decision making that people, you know, when people make decisions on their weekly shop, the products that we now have the choice of is so much more diverse. And it's really, really difficult for people. I jumped on just before we recorded this, jumped on to one of the UK's biggest tabloids and looked at this health specific section on there. And do I read you some of the headlines?
Go on. Let me see what I can debunk.
There's more. Okay, this one here. Get an artificial pancreas on the NHS. 150,000 type 1 diabetics are set to get gadget hailed as the biggest breakthrough since the discovery of insulin. So you can now get you will be able to get an artificial pancreas put into your...
Okay, I mean, for type 1 diabetics, I think that's awesome, because obviously type 1 diabetics, that is just, obviously you're born with diabetes for type 1. So I think that if they're helping people with type 1 diabetes, that's phenomenal.
My question would be how soon until that's rolled out till we all have one of those in. The next one, the healthy supplements not to take when you want to lose weight, including one that can make you gain 5 pounds in 1 week. There's three supplements they've said not to take if you want to lose weight.
Okay. I bet creatine is one of them.
Creatine, vitamin A, and whey, they've said not to. And the claim with creatine was...
Hold water.
That you will that you'll put on 5 pounds in a week, which, by the way, is not true. And if anyone is taking creatine, please continue to take it. The exact time Brits find themselves uncontrollably hungry is revealed. A study of 2,000 adults found the typical snack time for most Brits. When do you think it is?
Oh, it's got to be evening. It has to be evening.
They actually find themselves uncontrollably hungry by 10:30 a.m. Research has found as most Brits don't have breakfast. 27% get the munchies by mid-morning. A third have even got out of bed for a midnight snack. What do you think the five most popular snacks are in the UK?
Oh, God. I wouldn't even know what snacks are about. Chocolate bar, cereal bar.
It's up there. But just this study, quote-unquote study of 2,000 people, was funded by Walls, who I believe are a snack.
Yeah, aren't they like
they make snack products. So just bear in mind where your information is coming from. I think one of the things, and the conclusion with this, is that it's very difficult. I completely get it. And this is why, and this is, I don't know if I can say this without sounding biased, but I'm going to say anyway, this is where coaching really comes into its own, because I've definitely, for example, followed, you know, mentorships and programs and all these things where people have been doing things there that I've thought, okay, I need to do that. I need to do this. I need to do X, Y, and Z, 101 things. And actually, it's not been applicable for me. And weight loss is the same thing. And this is where having a coach, they can take all of this information and really cherry pick the relevant information for you.
100%. 100%. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And this is where I think, why I have my podcast, why you have your podcast, why both of our companies, is because we want to help people and give them the best fighting chance, because there are so many charlatans out there who are just trying to make a like completely false claims and so on and so forth, and basically get a cult following rather than actually just helping people to live better quality lives. And like I said, that's the goal of both of what we try and do with our information that we put out. And like if I'm ever, the thing is, like, it's not about being wrong. It's just there's no need to pick sides and stuff. It's like the different things work for different people. If you've followed keto and you've lost a great amount of weight and you want to stick to it. It works for you, great, but don't force it on every other individual, because some people really like carbs, like I do, right? So it's just one of those things that you just got to find the people you want to listen to information from, and then absorb that information is what I would say.
Yeah, find the people first, trust the people, then yeah, definitely.
Go from there. Awesome. Wonderful. Awesome. Thanks. No worries. Hope you, everyone listening, has a wonderful, wonderful rest of your week, and we will catch you next time. Peace.
Thank you for joining me on the Health Hacks podcast. As ever, I do appreciate your time and attention, as I know there are so many podcast platforms that you will be following and that you love. So the fact that you choose to spend your time with us is fantastic, and I hope you get a lot of value from the conversations that we have. If you'd like to find out more about the work we do with our client base, there is currently a 14-day trial of the Lifestyle Project taking place, and we'd love to welcome you. In those 14 days, our aim is to add a ton of value to jumpstart your health journey, help you build that momentum, and at the end of the 14 days, all we want is your very honest feedback on how you found your time with us. We want this to be the most amazing program that we have ever put together. So for the time being, there is a trial, and you can join us absolutely free for 14 days. All of the details are linked in the show notes. Jump onto the website. There are details of the program, more about our client experiences, and a frequently asked questions section, which will cover any queries that you might have about the program, what it involves, who it's suitable for, how much time it requires, how it works, etc. It's all there. Last but not least, the podcast now comes to you in partnership with Natural Cycles. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared birth control app. And if you'd like 20% off Natural Cycles and a free thermometer, simply use the link in the show notes to receive that discount. Thank you so much for joining me on Health Hacks, and we'll see you next week.